If Abraham and Sarah came to your church, how readily would you accept them as members? Welcome to Good Word, a weekly radio program, formerly known as Probe, which explores issues of faith. Our current series focuses on Old Testament couples. My name is Paul Dibdahl, and my conversation partners today are Zdravko Stefanovic, Professor of the Old Testament, and Carl Kosart, Professor of New Testament. And we are all three colleagues in the School of Theology at Walla Walla University. Welcome to both of you.
Thank you. Thank you.
The title of our lesson is Abraham and Sarah, Faith Tested and Tried. Let's start with that first question I asked a moment ago. If Abraham and Sarah came to church, how readily would we accept them into membership if we knew where they had come from? If we did a thorough background check, might we find things that would lead us to pause before we welcome them with open arms?
Well, we could welcome this. We know that he was apparently a faithful tither. That would surely help our church budget and ministry. So there's some positive things
okay,
there.
Okay, Carl.
We might like.
Bible does record that Abraham paid tithe. All right. Any things for concern? I'm turning things quickly negative here. But.
Well, he struggled a little bit with his tongue. A little problem with lying.
Okay.
But it goes a little bit deeper, perhaps, and darker for many church members in the sense that not only did he have one wife, but, at least he had a concubine on the side. And he tended to, in his relationship with his wife, turned out she was also, his sister as well, half-sister.
A half-sister. Yeah, and that would be a problem for us, I suspect. And it would have been a problem, it became a problem or was a problem in Scripture as well. It's a sin that we often skip over in Abraham's life. Maybe I should say Abraham and Sarah's life. But they were half-siblings, according to Genesis chapter 20, verse 12. Later on in the Bible, in the book of Leviticus, we find that such marriages are repeatedly forbidden by God. Such marriages are described as a disgrace in Leviticus chapter 20, verse 17. And those involved must be, and I'm quoting here, must be cut off before the eyes of the people. It seems ironic that such a couple such as this, would be sort of the father, the mother of the Israelite nation, the Jewish nation, Father Abraham.
It's an interesting question. To your original question, would they be accepted? Perhaps we should ask the question, at what point in his life? Maybe after Sarah had died, Keturah, in his older years, we probably would have accepted him very readily. But beforehand, there are some difficult issues.
What do we make of this, though? The fact that Abraham is not cut off before. Mm-hmm. In fact, he essentially begins, or God begins the nation of Israel through him, through a forbidden marriage.
The passages that are quoted here from Leviticus and Deuteronomy, they come from a later development in the story of the patriarchs and the matriarchs and God's leaders like Moses. As for Abraham and Sarah, the Bible tells us that they came from a polytheistic background, that in Terah's home several gods were worshipped. And for that reason, we need to not to impose our own rules and regulations on what Abraham should have done, because God meets people where they are, and he leads us all step by step toward the ideal that he has. Mm-hmm. And that's how I would like to read the story of Abraham. And on the top of that, the answer to your question would also depend on the concept that we have about the church. Mm-hmm. Is the church a place where there are only sinless people, or is it a place where we meet God and we still struggle with a number of issues, and it is God's work to draw us closer and closer to him?
I think this is an important point, because in Abraham we see someone who has a willing heart. His heart is open. His lifestyle practices need some modification, but his heart is open, and God can do much with a willing heart.
Mm.
And that's, I think that's Abraham.
Mm.
But now we've shifted towards Abraham. We need to shift back towards Sarah as well. That's this couple.
Yeah, a couple. Well, it's all right, though, I think, for us to look at them individually, too. We will find ourselves doing that. I just think to kind of follow up, Zdravko, with your point about the church, you know, what is the church? What kind of a place is it? I'm reminded of a story I read not long ago about, it was a young mother who, I think from just about anyone's perspective, was engaged in sin, quite a sinful, self-destructive kind of lifestyle. And someone asked her, well, have you ever thought about going to church? And her response was one of shock. She said, what? Go to church? I already feel guilty enough as it is.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. From her perspective, the church was a place where she would go and would be made to feel, you know, even worse than what she already did. It was not a place where she could go to receive help. Back to Abraham and Sarah. On two occasions, Abraham and Sarah deny that they are married. Abraham is afraid for his life. We can read about this in Genesis 12 as well as in Genesis 20. And what's somewhat disturbing is that in both cases, at least disturbing to me, in both cases, those who intended to take Sarah as a wife, the text indicates that they were punished by God, even though they weren't aware that she was married. What is it that we make of this? Doesn't it seem wrong that the one who lies is blessed? That was the part I left out. In the process, Abraham acquires wealth and so forth. He is blessed, while the one who acts with a clear conscience ends up suffering. Either of you want to say something about
this? There's just so much in these stories. It's so hard for us just to narrow it down. I mean, you have this whole issue connected to the promise in chapter 12, the promise of offspring. And when he gives his wife away, his sister away, he endangers the very promise that God gave him. And so you see, I think, God taking drastic means in each of those occasions to make sure that his wife is preserved and brought back to him. So it is kind of strange that, you know, as you said, this kind of reversal that takes place, but God's working in a drastic way.
In extenuating sort of circumstances or extreme circumstances where God is responding in extreme ways. Am I hearing you right there?
Yes.
Okay.
And I'm not sure that Abraham was very happy with the whole deal that is described in Genesis 12, let's say, because he fears for his life and he fabricates something. He uses Sarah. He acts in a strange way. He was unfair toward his spouse, for sure, and even unfair toward the Pharaoh. In his plan, in verse 13 here, it says, say that you are my sister so that I will be treated well. And ironically, in the story, it says that Abraham received all these gifts,
right,
and he was treated well. And yet, whenever I read this passage and ask others to react, almost everybody agrees that he was not a happy man.
Mm-hmm.
He most likely detested all those gifts.
Yeah.
And what is wonderful in the story is that finally, toward the end of this episode, the Lord steps in.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that Abraham got all those gifts was definitely a sign of God's grace toward him,
mm-hmm,
and also the Pharaoh's kindness toward him.
Yeah.
But that was something that he did not deserve.
Yeah. Would it be stretching, trying to make a lesson of where there isn't a lesson to be made here, but is it possible for us to conclude as well that even if we are unaware that what we are doing is a sin, might there still be negative consequences that we would suffer from that? So unknowingly doing something which is not right.
Well, definitely.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
I just think of the consequences, even, you know, we talked about, you know, Sarah and Abraham. Just imagine the strain, perhaps, in their marriage after she comes back. How does that affect the relationship? I mean, it must Must be a difficult circumstance.
Mm-hmm. Which is a lesson to me for all couples, how we treat each other, mm-hmm. and why would Abraham do that to take an advantage mm-hmm. of his spouse. It was simply unfair that he told her that she was beautiful for the sake of getting a favor from him. That was unfair.
Mm-hmm. And Sarah was very well known for her beauty, wasn't she? In Jewish literature, I think there's a real emphasis that, in spite of her age, she maintained striking. She was strikingly beautiful.
She was attractive. We also need to keep in mind that in going down to Egypt, the couple crossed the border between the two continents, and whenever a foreigner, someone who looks a little different, comes into a new setting, they become points of attraction.
You know, it's interesting because we look at the story and you kind of think of, poor Sarah in chapter 12, because Abraham takes advantage of her. But then chapter 16, Sarah's the one who comes up with this plan. We got this Egyptian girl, probably as a result of the gifts that came from the Pharaoh. And she kind of says, well, maybe this is the way, which says this is a relationship that's definitely not our typical modern relationship.
Yeah. And I just following up again on that, the promise that God gives to Abraham and to Sarah, that they would have an incredible number of descendants, yet they grow old and that promise mm-hmm. is not fulfilled. And we see, Carl, you mentioned the way in which they began to devise a plan to sort of help God along. When God makes a promise, do we simply wait for it to be fulfilled, or should we take a more active role in helping God's will to be accomplished?
If we want to consult modern maxims, we can say God helps those who help themselves. We do our best, and God does the rest.
Mm-hmm. Now, here's another one. Fools rush in where angels fear to tread, which kind of gives the opposite side of it.
Mm-hmm. Very often the point in these stories is when Abram and Sarah realize that they need help, and they go into action. Do they do it with God, relying on his help, or they try to do it on their own? In many of these stories, God is virtually absent for a while, and once they make a mistake and they are into a huge problem, God steps in to help them. So in claiming God's promises, we need to be active. We need to go about doing what is right, but that has to be done with the Lord, not a product of our own fabrication or manipulation.
Okay, wonderful. And Srafko, you said we have almost no time, but there's a part of the story, a favorite part of the story for you, which involves laughter. Do you want to close with that today? A detail that we shouldn't miss.
It's interesting that in talking about the patriarchs and the matriarchs, usually the matriarchs are blamed for the lack of faith, but in the story of Abraham, it was Abraham, the first person who laughed in Genesis 17:17 at God's promises, and Sarah did it only later on. She had apparently learned it from him.
Okay.
So she's not the only one to blame, as usually people do.
Okay.
Both of them did the same thing.
Thank you both for joining me today. Thanks also to Susan Michael, our program engineer. And finally, thank you for listening in. For Good Word, this is Paul Dibdahl.
You've been listening to Good Word, a production of the School of Theology at Walla Walla University and KGTS-FM. To order a copy of today's broadcast, you can call 509-527-2194. Thanks for listening, and we'll be here next week at this time with Good Word.